Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School. I invite you at this time to get your Bibles and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 8. And in just a moment, we're going to read 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 10 through 18. And we're in the middle of a Sunday school lesson that was written about Samuel, and particularly it dwells on that rejection of Israel of Samuel as a judge. And in rejecting Samuel, they were rejecting God. And our Sunday school teacher, E.A. Elam, wrote a special essay about this for the Sunday school of May the 6th, 1923. And we're reading that essay over the air to bring those old words back to life. And he's drawing lessons from that apply to us today. And particularly the lesson is that when we reject God's way and God's plan, we are rejecting God. And while in our own wisdom sometimes we might think we know a better way, the truth is God's way is always the best, and a lot of times the human ways that we come up with have consequences that we did not anticipate and that we would not desire. And that's what we're going to look at when we look at 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 10 through 18, and continue reading this essay. So while you're looking to turning in your Bibles to 1 Samuel 8, 10 through 18, I'll remind you that the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond Mountain, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now let's turn in our Bibles and read this text, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 10 through 18. And Samuel told all the words of Jehovah unto the people that asked of him a king. And he said, This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons, and appoint them unto him, for his chariots and to his horsemen, and they shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint them to be captains of thousands and captains of fifties, and he will set some to plow his ground, and to reap his harvests, and to make his instruments of war, and the instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be perfumers, and to be cooks, and to be bakers. And he will take your fields, and your vineyards, and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. And he will take the tenth of your seed, and of your vineyards, and give to his officers and his servants. He will take your men servants and your maid servants, your goodliest young men and your asses, and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and ye shall be his servants. And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king whom ye have chosen you. And Jehovah will not answer you in that day. Oh, such a solemn warning we ought to heed when we think about our own government. You know, the more we ask the government to do for us, the more the government thinks it can tell us what to do. And if we would simply take responsibility for ourselves and take care of our own families and do things after God's way, well, we would be better off than having a strong government trying to tell us what to do and to take care of all of our needs. I always appreciated the fact that America is called the land of the free and the home of the brave. But of course, if you really want to be free, you're going to have to be brave. And that means accepting responsibility for yourself. But let's now return to Elam's lesson. We read about the people's decision. After Samuel's warning and solemn protest, the people refused to hear him. And they said, Nay, but we will have a king over us, that we may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Then God told Samuel to hearken unto their voice and to make them a king. Why did God grant a king, since seeking one was rejection of himself? Because when God sets good and evil, right and wrong, the true and the false way clearly before people, he then allows them to choose which way they will do and whom they will serve. He could not do otherwise, and to hold them responsible for their conduct and their said consequences. The kingdom is an extension, and worldly prosperity flourished for a while. However, it was soon divided and went from bad to worse and was finally destroyed. In its strife and contentions, divisions and continual wars, morality and spirituality became weak, idolatrous, and basely corrupt condition. God said, "It is thy destruction, O Israel, that thou art against me, against thy help. Where now is thy king, that he may save thee and all thy cities, and thy judges whom thou saidest, give me a king and princes? I have given thee a king in mine anger, and I have taken him away in my wrath." Hosea chapter 13, verses 9 through 11. It has been human wisdom and human effort since the incipiency of the great and mightiest ecclesiasticism on earth, the church at Rome, to unite the churches under one earthly head. Years ago, this work began with Churches of Christ, to unite these churches into one huge central national organization and government that would give them prestige and worldly greatness and glory among the denominations of the earth. But this has ever led and still leads to strife, division, corruption, humiliation, and destruction. In vain, as did Samuel, grand and godly, true and faithful, gray-haired and venerable men, full of the knowledge of the truth and of the Spirit of Christ, loving the church and her peace above their chief joy, have solemnly protested and warned against this great evil. Yet many say, "Nay, but we intend to have it." To what it has led already: strife, division, and infidelity declare. And the end is not yet. In the same reverence and awe for God and profound respect for his way and rule in the church, such men may most solemnly protest and warn against a one-man pastor or a one-man minister or a one-man evangelist or any other one-man rule against other religious organizations than the church, and may point out most clearly the oppressed and other evils to which all this surely leads. Yet many congregations will say, "Nay, but we want them." And many young men will say, "Nay, but we want to just fill such places." It is not an uncommon thing for a youth minister or local evangelist or whatever he may call himself to demand so many hundred or even many thousands of dollars a year, with a parsonage and an automobile thrown in, to serve a congregation. Can you imagine Paul, Timothy, and Titus, and Peter preaching on such a basis? According to this system, when will the destitute places be evangelized? Where now are the ministers, evangelists, etc., willing and ready to go to the highways and hedges, hills and hollows and waste places, adapting themselves to the homes and habits of the poor in order to preach the gospel for Christ's sake? There may be professed clergymen or professed evangelists or professed ministers. What's the difference? But the only right and safe way is to study and to learn and to practice the New Testament teaching on this subject, as well as on all others. Preachers, evangelists, and different kinds of ministers are mentioned in the New Testament, and all have their necessary work to perform. And the work of the New Testament will never be fully done until all this work is done according to the teaching and in the Spirit of Christ. Also, the New Testament teaches the just and free and liberal support of preachers and evangelists and elders who labor in word and teaching, and that the laborer is worthy of his hire. Its teaching is as clear and plain on this subject as on any other. Let us all teach and follow that, but never attempt to change God's order of government, or of work, or of worship. And with that, we bring to a conclusion the study and the lessons we can learn from this great man, Samuel. And we're going to look at another great man in the Old Testament. This is for a Sunday school lesson written for the Sunday of May 13th, 1923. And it is a study about David. The title of the lesson is David the Poet King. And the Sunday school teacher suggests a survey of David's life. I have picked out several passages of scriptures that I think, if we'll read, will highlight some of the high points of David's life. And this lesson is going to dwell on 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. And so I want to read that first, and then we'll be returning to this in future classes. But this is where we're introduced to David, and then we're going to look at other passages about David. You see, to begin with, we need to remember that David was a shepherd boy. Now here's what we read in 1 Samuel chapter 16. Jehovah said unto Samuel, "How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I've rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill thy horn with oil and go, and I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons." And Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me." And Jehovah said, "Take an heifer with thee, and say, I'm come to sacrifice to Jehovah, and call Jesse to the sacrifice. And I will show thee what thou shalt do, and thou shalt anoint unto me whom I name unto thee." And Samuel did that which Jehovah spake, and came to Bethlehem. And the elders of the city came to meet him, trembling, and said, "Comest thou peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably I am come to sacrifice unto Jehovah. Sanctify yourselves, and come with me to the sacrifice." And he sanctified Jesse and his sons, and called them to the sacrifice. And it came to pass, when they were come, that he looked on Eliab, and said, "Surely Jehovah's anointed is before him." But Jehovah said unto Samuel, "Look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature. Behold, I have rejected him. For Jehovah seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but Jehovah looketh on the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab, and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, "Neither hath Jehovah chosen this." Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, "Neither hath Jehovah chosen this." And Jesse made seven of his sons to pass before Samuel. And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Jehovah hath not chosen these." And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Are all these all thy children?" And he said, "There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he is keeping the sheep." And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Send and fetch him, for I will not sit down till he come hither." And he sent and brought him in. Now he was a ruddy and of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look upon. And Jehovah said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of Jehovah came mightily upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Well, that's where we begin this study of David, one of the great men of the Old Testament. And I would invite you to tune in, and we're going to study David as a shepherd, and as a hero, and as a fugitive, and as a king.